This is the EWN Radio Network.
This is Close Up with Phyllis Smith.
Yes, and welcome to Close Up. I'm so glad that you have selected this show today. So I'm Phyllis Smith. And, you know, if you've been to business school, received your MBA, spent oodles of dollars to make that all happen, there are still many, many things that you won't learn from that fancy degree. So today I bring you someone who is an entrepreneur, a business coach, financial advisor, a mentor. She's the managing director of the eWomen Network Seattle chapter and two-time winner of the managing director of the year. So she knows her stuff, and she's a great human being and a good friend. So please welcome Debbie Whitlock. Yay!
Thanks, Phyllis. Yay! The crowd goes wild.
And the crowd went wild. That's right. Okay, so Deb, what I want to cover today, there was an article actually written in Entrepreneur Magazine by Jason Demers. So I want to give him credit for pointing out five problems business school won't prepare you for. But we're going to dive much deeper than he did. So one of the things that he brings up is cash flow management. Now, you are a financial expert. And so I think that you could certainly cover this in great depth. He says that in business school, you'll learn about cash flow management. You'll learn its definition, why it's important, and how to manage it in a real environment. But he says school won't prepare you for the continuous demand that cash flow management takes. So from the, you know, let's just start from the foundation of cash flow management as an entrepreneur. What are some of the basics that need to be addressed from the get-go?
Yeah, so one of the things that we get really focused on, I see entrepreneurs focusing on, is the top line revenue numbers. So we're going to start with that, you know, and we hear, entrepreneurs batting around, I'm a seven-figure and a six-figure business and blah, blah, blah. But nobody's talking about what the bottom line number is, which is after all the expenses and all the things that you run to, you know, what is it that you're really left with? So when I start working with a client, I love the fact that we're going to talk about making more money, but I need to see where they're spending money first. And I tell them we need to go hunting for some of the leaky holes in the boat. So the first thing an entrepreneur needs to do is to get really clear with what their expenses are and keep them as tight as they possibly can, not for as long as they can, but frankly forever. Because what happens is you start to get increased top line number, and then it becomes a little bit easier to become free and easy with the money. And so you're not paying as close attention when you have more money where it's going. So I actually create for, you know, my clients a weekly check-in of where their money is going so they really know. And one of the things I joke with entrepreneurs about is that ish is not a commonly accepted accounting principle. When I say, what does it cost you to run your business every month, you can't say, oh, it's about 10,000-ish. You know, anytime the word about and ish are put together with money, we already know that there's opportunity for improvement.
Right. Yeah, one of the things that the writer talks about is to check your bank statements and pay close attention, which is what you're talking about, to your bills and invoices, both incoming and outgoing. What can happen if you don't? I mean, what are some of the pitfalls?
Yeah, so what happens is, you know, you get expense creep, meaning you're not clear where the money's going. And what happens is you might get a good month, and so there's extra cash. So you start spending, but you're not spending with a clear idea of what the expected return is. Every time a client invests money in their business, that money has a job to bring more money back. And if we're not clear on identifying how that money is supposed to go attract other money in terms of revenue, then we need to hit the pause button. The second thing that every business owner must have is a written statement of accounts receivable. Another thing that I see really, really mess up, especially mid-stage entrepreneurs, is they're really cruddy at their invoicing. You know, they do a project, but they don't have it written down. You know, as an example, I have a client who it is a written policy, and she communicates it clearly with her clients about how the money is expected to be paid and received. So she invoices on the 25th of the month, regardless of what day the 25th is. Payment is due by the 1st. If payment doesn't come by the 1st, the client gets a gentle love nudge on the 2nd. And if they don't respond to that, they get a phone call on the 3rd. And if they don't respond to that, they get fired on the 4th. So making it really clear about what the expectation is. And here's the other thing. You know, when we were working up this policy for her, she said to me, gosh, that seems really harsh. I said, no, it's clear communication. If people have a problem with it on their end, then let them pick up the phone and call you. Like I have, you know, in the years I've owned my different businesses, I had vendors who would call me and say, hey, look, I can't pay that invoice in full. Can I give you a portion now and then a portion in a few days and, you know, even add a little interest or something? Look, just set up the expectation and it really avoids a lot of that confusion, especially for women, because we are not the best at talking about money. And it makes us really uncomfortable. So if you write it down, set it up front, you really avoid a lot of heartache and heartbreak on the journey.
What about cash flow for those startups where really they're not making anything, but there is there's a lot of expense going out, you know, to set up, you know, need I say, you know, many things, your website to, you know, creating flyers, you know, whatever it is you're doing. Yeah. There's going to be, and they might not be humongous expenses, but how do you manage quote cash flow because you don't have the flow coming in?
Right, exactly. So that means, you know, that's the whole bootstrap philosophy, right? So you have to have a little bit of seed money is my first thing. If you're just hanging up your shingle to be a insert your occupation job title here, that's going to be a tough road for you to build. You need to have a little bit of seed money. And if that means you need to stick in your current gig a little bit longer and funnel some stuff off to the side or take on a side project until you get, you know, an amount of money. You know, if you're a service-based business, maybe you want to launch a coaching or consulting business. You know, you can get that off the ground with, say, you know, $5,000, $10,000. Now, it's going to require you, though, to be really specific about where you need to invest. And so making sure that you know where your money is going to get the biggest return, establishing community, being able to get yourself out there. You know, eWomen Network, obviously, when a new startup, a new business venture is coming, you have to find your tribe and you're going to have to make an investment in a membership organization of people who are like-minded, who are your potential, you know, client population, and more importantly, also a potential marketing and connection source for you. And so really making an investment there. That is the kind of thing that's going to give you a great ROI, especially the longer that you stay in it. And then you have to think about, you know, your own business model. How are your clients going to find you? You know, I would love to say that, you know, as a business coach, every client finds me online. They don't. Like, that's just, they don't. I have a web presence, but people aren't hiring me just because I have a website. So while you do need to have a website, also be really mindful of how you can scale your website, right? You can get things started relatively inexpensively. You can outsource and maybe find, you know, a trade school in your community who has a student that would like to work on a project for as a quote-unquote internship now. You can still pay them for that, but, you know, they're looking to add to their portfolio. So interviewing trade schools, seeing if, you know, somebody there is looking for a side project. You can also, you know, go to organizations like Odesk and Elance and do some bidding. And so you can get some really good web work done at a nominal price without, you know, really busting the bank on the full meal deal. You know, a client will want, you know, in their business plan, say, have, you know, maybe a membership option for their website. And so to put together some kind of back-end membership situation, you know, could run you upwards of $20,000, $25,000. You know, that's a pretty tough investment to make if you don't have all the capital sitting around. And I'm not a fan of leveraging credit to do that. So the other thing I would say to you is as clients are coming in, have a mathematical formula that you follow for the amount of revenue that is going back into reinvestment. So if you're, you know, getting $1,000, just easy math, on a particular from a particular client, you need to have an agreement with yourself that of that $1,000 for, say, the first 6 months, 50%, 60% of it is reinvested back into a certain aspect of your business. This is not the time where realistically you're going to be pulling your quote-unquote salary from this because you're going to be reinvesting. But that's a way you can leverage it and not have to be hitting your credit card, and you can bootstrap this, you know, on your own.
And I want to go back to something you said. This might not necessarily be cash flow directly, but you talked about establishing community. One thing that you do amazingly well is the online community that you establish. You give a lot of free advice, but you also create these wonderful communities where people can come in, like-minded people who are, like you have one, for example, you know, of entrepreneurs. You invite them, and then they come in, and this is on Facebook. It's a special group where people share thoughts, ideas. You have your own thing that you're sharing. And so it seems like when that developing that community, especially when you're starting out, is the key to eventually building that cash flow and get that income coming in.
Absolutely. You know, this has been something that, you know, two schools of thought, you know, there was the original school of thought, the old model, which was keep it all close to the vest, make people wonder what you do, and make them, you know, ask you or hire you before you give it to them. And in the transparent and open culture that is out there, especially social media and on the internet, you know, information is out there. It's out there everywhere. And so whatever it is that you want to be known for as the subject matter expert, if you can position yourself and you can share kernels and nuggets and tidbits of things with people and bring them together in conversation, it elevates your real and perceived credibility, and it makes people want more of you. The true model now is, my gosh, if she or he is that generous and, like, just with their time and with their information and being so open, like, and I'm not even a paying client, like, how does she deliver to a paying client? Like, what kind of immense value am I going to get? And I know for myself, you know, that's been really instrumental in my business. Is it started myself when I became a radio host, you know, 6 years ago here in Seattle, elevating my real and perceived credibility in the community as being the person who had access to every resource that my community would need. I don't have all the answers, but what I do know is I know the people who have the answers. And when you can put yourself in that position, it really brings a whole new level of respect and trust to you. So if we think about the know, like, and trust formula of doing business, it just shortens that cycle and puts people in a place of, gosh, you know, she's really somebody that I can count on. And it's a lot easier for them to want to do business. It shortens your own sales cycle, and it also tends to increase the stickiness of the people that you work with. They're already raving fans by the time they hire you, and it you know, the doubt about, gosh, is this going to work? No, they're in. Like, their buy-in is real.
Yeah, and you can give a lot of free stuff, but when it comes time to actually say you have a workshop or you have some kind of paid service or product, they want to be a part of it because of that credibility and the likability and all of that you've established. Moving on real quick before we go to a short break, another problem that you don't learn in business school, this is kind of read, you know, what's between the lines. Decision fatigue, I think, is really interesting. The writer says it's a real phenomenon. He says business school teaches you concepts like SWOT, right? Strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. And that's a great analysis. He says it helps you make better, more informed decisions, but it really doesn't prepare you in terms of handling yourself when you face dozens of hundreds of small yet significant decisions every day. Can you give just, you know, one tip on how to handle the monstrous amount of smaller decision, you know, paper, plastic, you know, kind of thing that entrepreneurs handle every day?
Yeah, so I think there's a couple, three things. First of all, I am a big fan of time blocking. So I block out time to deal with these types of decisions every day. So I have time chunked on my calendar in the morning and in the afternoon to do with that. The other tip that I would give is embed, meaning that from a concept of, you know, goal setting or planning, embedding is the idea of making something really easy for yourself so that you don't have to think about it. As an example, I put together the list of the three or four things I already know I need to get done tomorrow before I finish my day. It helps me stay focused so that then I'm not landing at my computer or my desk in the morning and thinking, okay, so I've got my list of all my things to do and things I have to decide about, but I don't know where to start. I made that decision the night before, and I have my things, and I check, and I go through it. The more organized that you can be, the more systematic that you can be, whether it's time blocking, you know, 15, 30 minutes in the morning, 15, 30 minutes in the afternoon to make these decisions, and then embed, create a process where, you know, you already know what you're going to do when you land in your day. And the other thing is a little bit of self-care. You know, I'll say to you right now, you cannot charge hard all day long. And self-care can be something as simple as I got to get up from my desk and take, you know, a little 5-minute walk. You know, grab the dog, take a 5-minute walk, get some fresh air. It just changes your perspective. You know, Tony Robbins talks about how we can change our mind when we change our physiology. And I know this is something that you care very much about, Phyllis. So this idea of simply like I can get into a thinking, like into a project and my head is all wrapped up. And the best way for me to shift that is not to tell myself, stop doing that. It's just to stand up. Stand up, stretch, bend over, touch my toes, spin around in a circle, you know, take a quick little walk if I can, but you can also change your physiology. So you have to get the self-care piece in there too.
Right. And that was actually one of the five problems you don't learn is also about time management. So you actually time management is also bleeding into decision fatigue or preventing decision fatigue is to do those things, other things, possibly delegating, relaxation techniques like you just talked about, and decision management by managing your time well, these things can flow much better than, you know, everything just piling up. So we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about some of the things that you don't learn in business school, but you need to survive as an entrepreneur. So stand by.
Hi, I'm Janelle McCauley, the host of Eat Great, Live Well Radio, right here on the EWN Radio Network. Join me every Thursday to find out how you can take control of your health and your life. No complicated medical speak. Just straight talk about eating healthier without giving up the food you love. Each week, I'll bring you powerful and revealing interviews with doctors, health experts, and people just like you who have learned to create a healthy future for themselves and the ones they love. I look forward to serving you great content and healthy tips on Eat Great, Live Well Radio. And remember, if you can't listen to me live, you can always get the replay at EWNRadioNetwork.com. I invite you to join me each Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, here on the EWN Radio Network, and let's create your healthy future together.
Hi, I'm Sandra Yancey, founder and CEO of eWomen Network. One of my mottos for business owners is, you can't do it alone. Whether you're in the startup stage of your business or you're scaling, you can't grow without relationships to provide support, wisdom, and new customers. eWomen Network is your home to connect with other women entrepreneurs who have been where you are or are experiencing the same challenges. We have chapters across the U.S. and Canada that have monthly events featuring our trademarked process called Accelerated Networking to ensure you get the contacts, resources, and leads you need to grow your business. And once you become a member, you get many benefits, including 2 one-on-one coaching sessions, unlimited access to our membership database, your own personal profile page, and discounts on products and services with our business partners such as UPS and American Express Open. Join the eWomen Network community and let us help you live your dream. For details, visit eWomenNetwork.com.
You're listening to Close Up with Phyllis Smith.
And welcome back. Close up. This is Phyllis. And I'm speaking. talking with the fabulous Debbie Whitlock. And Debbie is an entrepreneur. She is a financial advisor. She's had many businesses. She's a mentor. She is the managing director of the Seattle chapter of eWomen Network and two times managing director of the year. So this is a woman that you need to know. If you are an entrepreneur, she has the experience, but she can really see things from the big picture all the way down to the small picture. So we've been talking about problems that occur as an entrepreneur that you don't really learn how to solve from business school. So all that fancy degree and all that money you spend, it's important, but there's a lot of, you know, between the lines kind of thing that will erupt as time goes on in your business. So first, just so repeating, cash flow management is one thing, very important to stay on top of that. Make sure you know what money's coming in and what money's going out. More importantly, start with what's going in. What's going out. Decision fatigue. A lot has to do with time management. You learn about how to make the big decisions and from when you're in business school, but it's also dozens of hundreds of small little decisions you have to make, and you can get exhausted. Time blocking. Debbie talks about embedding. Make it easy so you don't have to make it easy on yourself. Prepare, create systems for yourself so that you don't have to just, everything isn't jumbled. Know what you need to do the next day, but write it down the day before and so forth. And of course, self-care. And so and that bleeds into time management, which is another thing you don't really learn well. In terms of an entrepreneur from business school. So now, Deb, I want to dive into consumer behavior. This is another problem. The writer of this article, Jason Dimmers, in Entrepreneur Magazine, I do want to give him credit for sort of breaking this out and kind of simplifying things. But he says that in as entrepreneurs, you learn in business school, we like to pretend that we can predict consumer behavior. Business school teaches you how to make a best guess. But he says, in reality, best guesses don't necessarily work. There's so many variables in reactions from consumer behavior. So what are your thoughts on that?
So just when we think we know what our ideal customer is going to do, they go and do something else. And we feel like, right, we feel like we're chasing them all the time. So, one of the things that I think can really help an entrepreneur is getting really specific to minimize this impact on your business is to get really specific with your niche, knowing exactly who you are. There was always a phrase that I grew up with, which was, cast a wide net, and it increases your chances. And, especially in our world today where there's so much noise and so much information coming at us, the broader we are, the more we just blend in. And so from a consumer standpoint, if you can get really specific about your niche, really in touch, and it's not, I'll have people come to me, and again, because of our connections at eWomen Network, people, I'll say, tell them about your ideal client, and they'll say, well, that's, women. I'm like, okay, well, that's a big chunk of the population. We'll try and narrow it down a little further, women who what? And then you keep distilling that down until you have, a nice little mic that you can really speak to, and then really understand what it is those people are desiring. What I think people really wanted when I launched my coaching business is not what they think they want right out of the gate. They know it's a result that they wanted, but they think they want something else, right? So I spent a year, talking about the thing that I thought everyone wanted to know about. And as it turns out, they want that as a result, but that's not what they want to know about. So I had to recraft my entire message to include a whole different initiation, an introduction to what it was that I did, so that at the end, people were like, oh, and when I do that, I get that result. So it's just a little bit of a shift. And, you know, the other thing, too, he talks about in the article is, you know, we don't need to, you know, throw everything out. Like, just because we do, you know, we think we know, it would have been really easy for me, you know, when I launched the coaching business, you know, I thought everyone wanted to know about cash flow, like, because that's what they wanted. That's what people would ask me about. No, they wanted that as a result. What they really wanted to know was how do they get to the cash flow. So it would have been easy for me to say, well, my concept of business coaching around cash flow doesn't work. Wrong. My concept about business coaching around cash flow does work. I just need to create another vehicle to bring them into that conversation. People weren't ready to hop into the front end. They wanted to start, you know, they needed to see some result before they were ready to do that. But it could have been easy for me to say, well, you know what, business coaching wasn't for me, so I'm just going to hang it up. So I got to reinvent it and retool it a little bit. And so that's what I would say to entrepreneurs listening is get creative. If something doesn't work the first time, if you think, you know, you did your consumer predictor or you did a launch or you tried to throw something out there and it didn't stick or it didn't take or there wasn't the response you wanted, you know, reevaluate it and think, okay, well, I have this put together. So where would that land? Who could benefit from that? Or how could I even rechange the titling of it and attract a new market or a new, you know, business opportunity?
What's the best way to know that?
Well, you know, that goes back to the community conversation. I have to tell you, if you have a community of people who believe in your message, you know, who are really starting to trust you and evaluate, you know, you as, you know, the credible authority in that space, being able to just be transparent with them and say, hey, I tossed this out there and it didn't work. You know, transparency and authenticity is a new currency in the entrepreneurial world. And there's a difference between, you know, I think some people throw things out there because they, you know, they want to be saved, if you will. They want to be patted on the back and told, gosh, it'll be okay, you'll be fine. But this idea of, you know, transparency and authenticity as a new currency shows that we have more like than we are different. And Sandra Yancey says that, you know, we are more similar than we are different. And so if I launch something that just, you know, took a nosedive, it was a real stinker, right? And instead of pretending it all off and saying, hey, you know, when people are saying, so how'd your launch go? And going, oh, it was great, you know, and you've got like one person. You know, just being really open with your community and saying, hey, I've launched this thing and it did not land. You know, because there's a collective wisdom that you can tap into when you have community and say, hey, take a look. What did I miss here? Because too often we get busy creating the thing, but we don't ask for input along the way. So if you miss that step and you're sitting with something that was kind of a stinker, you know, put it up to your community and say, take a look at this. Like, what am I missing? You know, I saw this even in the managing director, you know, community here the last couple of days. There was a question, you know, from inside the corporate office asking for some of us leaders on some input. And that input, I believe, is going to make a huge impact on, you know, a program that the company will be able to, you know, initiate. And so just being able to ask, you know, hey, what do you think about this? It makes a huge difference in your business.
You know, I'm watching this online course with Brené Brown, and it's all about being vulnerable. And she talks about how important it is in human relation that we share our vulnerabilities. That's how we connect with people. And I think what you're saying when you talk about community is connecting with people, that you are a person, you're not a business. And and a person connects with a person. People don't connect with a business. And and what you're talking about. I love that transparency and authenticity is a new currency. Tweet that. That's a tweetable, everybody. So and so now that also the last thing I want to move in terms of what you don't learn while you're getting your MBA is likability. And what the writer talks about is, you know, you can't. You know, you got a personality, right? You know, but he says you're in denial if you think you can be in business and not be likable. Things you can learn, like looking at someone eye to eye, you know, looking in their eyes, smiling. There's certain things you can learn to do. But he's talking about how important it is when you have a business to be likable. Again, going back to what you've been talking about through this, through our entire conversation, is this community is developing mm-hmm. that likability. You can't run before you can walk. To be fully transparent, I am, I as you alluded to earlier, I'm also have kind of a side thing in the health and wellness industry business, and I've tried to do a launch a couple of workshops, and frankly, I got no response. And why didn't I get response? And I'm being transparent, is that I didn't create an online community for people to know me, and especially when you're working in healthcare, that's very personal. And so unless I create that, and I figured that out on my own, but I figured out that I was running before I walked. And so it really brought me back to, you know, square zero and knowing that I got to, you know, you got to start with the community.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the movie Field of Dreams, you know, the big deal was build it and they will come. And unfortunately, too many entrepreneurs, especially in the info space, are spending inordinate amounts of time building it and waiting for them to come or hoping for them to come. And I really invite people to hit the pause button on that and say you need to be able to have like a 60-40 split. You have to be building your tribe and, you know, building your it, your thing, your launch, your product, your, you know, offer, your promotion, whatever it is, you know, alongside it. It can't be one in at the expense of the other. Likeability is a big deal. You know, if you're just kind of a crummy person, I don't care how amazing products are, it's just not going to work for you. You know, I my personal story, and I share this a little bit, you know, I was 39 and I woke up on my 39th birthday and I was like sobbing in my living room. And birthdays don't bother me. Like, I love birthdays. They make me really excited. And, you know, my husband came down at the time and he looked at me. He goes, what's happened? What's wrong? And I'm like, I'm going to be 40 next year. And he goes, yeah, but you're 39 today. Like, what's the problem? And I said, you know, if I was 40 today, I would have no one to invite to my birthday party. And he goes, what do you mean? I said, I am not the... Well, and so here's the thing, though. It was a big gut check for me. I was in the middle of a big personal growth deal. I'd been stretching myself and asking myself a lot of questions. But what it really came down to, Phyllis, was I was not the kind of person that I wanted to be friends with. And that changed my entire life. And I read something a while ago that we should all be the kind of person that if someone said something badly about us, no one would believe it. And so just being kind and compassionate and curious and patient and just really taking that edge off. There was an edge about me as an entrepreneur for a really long time. And I know while I had success, I wonder what success would have looked like had I learned the concept of vulnerability, transparency, authenticity earlier in that journey. Likeability is a big deal. You cannot run a business at the expense of everyone around you. You know, that male model of entrepreneurship, which was, you know, crush it, kill it, make the deals, nobody cares how anyone else feels on the other side, et cetera, that's just not working. Like in our current culture, especially with so many women entrepreneurs, it doesn't mean that, you know, we are, you know, soft and we can't make tough or hard decisions. It just means we approach business differently. And likability is a big deal. And I just will say to you, you know, as one person who's been on this journey now for a little while, if you don't like yourself, which was my problem, if you don't like yourself, it's really hard for other people to like you too. You figure out how to like yourself, the world will like you. And that's when the magic starts to happen in your business. And people will be like crawling over themselves to figure out how they can support you, how they can help you, and how they can do business with you.
And we're going to end on that. But first, Deb, how can people reach you?
I love it. Thanks for that, Phyllis. You know, my online home, just go to debbiewhitlock.com, DebbieWhitlock.com. You'll see my face there and all other ways to connect with me. I have a complimentary pathway to profitability guide. So if people are trying to figure out how to make more money in their business, they can ask for that and we'll send them that to support their journey.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Deb, for your time and wisdom. We could go on all day, but we're going to have to cut it for now. So thank you again for sharing your time and your experience and just your beauty inside and out.
Thanks, Phyllis.
I'm looking for a certain kind of woman, and I think you know her. She's an entrepreneur that is highly connected, successful, significant in her own industry, and considered the go-to woman in her community. She's received so much from so many women in business, she's ready to give back to others on their journey, lifting as she climbs. Hi, this is Sandra Yancey, and I'm the founder and CEO of eWomen Network. I'm looking to connect with the woman I've just described who lives in your community so that we might have a conversation about how eWomen Network's proven success system can provide her a platform to elevate her success and ability to support women in business. Our international community of managing directors are influencing the speed of success for women in business around the world. If that sounds like something that you want to be part of or know someone we should talk with, send an email to managingdirector@ewomennetwork.com. That's managingdirector@ewomennetwork.com, and let's start the conversation.
Hey, Phyllis Smith here. Thanks for listening to Close Up today. And don't forget to visit EWNRadioNetwork.com and check out some of my other shows, as well as shows from other fabulous hosts that span topics from business to health to grief recovery. See you soon.